Okay, as we start a new chapter, again, kind of flipping the script a little bit, looking at motivation and emotion. Again, we're trying to answer the question of why a little bit. Why do we do the things we do? How we do them? Trying to understand perhaps why we get out of bed in the morning, you know, beyond just to eat. If there's anything else beyond just wanting to eat. If there's anything more complex than that. So today we're going to go over a number of different theories of motivation. Whoops, what is this?
Did you notice your information bar?
I just did, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Just noticed it now. Let me escape this. Okay, as we start to look at starting first with motivation, we're going to start to see an interplay of a number of different factors that get us to do just about anything, or how we react to different situations. We're going to start first with motivation, we're going to move to emotion later on in the chapter. Starting off with what motivation is, a motive is a stimulus that moves a person to behave in ways designed to accomplish a specific goal. Okay? Again, in doing this, we're trying to answer the question of why. And part of this that's going to play in as well is that we know, at least from a biological level, and as we'll find also from a psychological level, we have certain needs. Okay, so again, we're going to see a number of different theories about motivation. But we know we have certain needs that may affect what motivates us. A need is defined as a condition in which we require something we lack. Okay, and that's broken down into biological and psychological categories. The biological is pretty straightforward, right? With the biological, it's going to be hunger, it's going to be thirst, it's going to be warmth. Probably protection, safety, bodily safety, protection from pain, okay? Pain avoidance, I guess you would say. The biological is going to be pretty straightforward. The psychological might not be quite as much, but we do have psychological needs as well. A couple of examples would be self-esteem, social approval, just as a couple of examples. And part of the reason we find with this, part of the reason that I bring up the psychological side of this, is that we're starting to find that there is more to us than just those straightforward biological needs, food and water. Do you guys remember when we watched that short video from 60 Minutes on sleep deprivation? Sleep deprivation? Yes, this was in a biological category as well. But they found with rats, they kept rats up. Somehow, I don't really remember the study, but they kept rats up for 5 days straight without letting them go to sleep, and the rats actually passed away. It did not survive. Now, if we think of rats as being analogous to our own experience, you know, that might say you can't do that study on people, but that might say that the same thing would happen to us. We can't do that study, but they did do the sleep deprivation studies with people where they found that people, when sleep deprived for a longer period of time, you know, they kept on waking them up throughout the night. They didn't let them get any quality sleep, any REM sleep. That they got very stressed out, very unnerved, very high and low emotions. Okay. Without our kind of basic framework of how we feel on a daily basis, if that starts to deteriorate, if, for example, our self-esteem starts to deteriorate, what we find is that typically our quality of life and possibly even our life could be in danger as well. Okay, so we have very strong needs that actually go beyond the biological side of things, if that makes any sense. Find that some psychological needs can be learned. They're not all necessarily biological, and they're not all necessarily deprivation-based. Don't need to be without them to be driven towards them. So we have a motive, we have needs, both biological and psychological, that go into making up what motivates us. To go along with those needs, we have something that we call drives. Drives are the forces that motivate an organism such as us to take action. Okay? So for example, we need food, that's our biological need. As a reaction to that, our body gives off a drive. It makes us driven to go get that food. We feel the hunger pains, that drives us to go in search of food. Because while we might need hunger, if our body didn't tell us that, then we would all probably starve. Okay, so our body creates that feeling of hunger pain. We want to get rid of that. Therefore, we are driven. We have that hunger drive to satisfy it. Okay, so we got these three different things going on here. We've got motives, we've got needs, and we've got drives, all interplaying to create motivation in the way we go about things. Looking at a number of different theories of motivation. Complicated subject, there's not total accord on it, so we have a number of different theories. And the answer, you know, in fact, I'm actually going to have you look at these theories afterwards, so I'm not going to say too much yet. One theory called the instinct theory. This is the idea that behavior patterns are genetically transmitted. So the way we behave is pretty much entirely genetic or biological in nature. For example, you freeze when you see a car coming at you. We've talked about that example a number of times, how evolutionary biologists or evolutionary psychologists would say that that has to do with going back and back and back throughout human history, perhaps reacting to a predator, trying to avoid that predator, freezing in reaction to not showing movement or trying to avoid that predator from activating its instinct and coming after us. Of course, somewhat outdated today. Right? So, if we go far enough back, we found that most psychologists, at least at one point, believed that all human behavior was genetically motivated. Okay? And as we go through the course, you see certain things. I've talked about different studies from evolutionary biology that might make you feel that way, might make you feel a little bit determined at times. So that's kind of where instinct theory is coming from. Today, most psychologists would look around at the world in general and just, there's too many different types of behaviors that have come about, too much variation, too much variety in human behavior to have this holistically account for human behavior, but that doesn't mean that it's not a part of it. So, the instinct theory is one theory trying to explain motivation. The idea, the evolutionary kind of biology aspect or perspective, that most of our reactions, most of our behaviors are inborn. Okay. So that's the instinct theory. Another theory called the drive reduction theory. It's the idea that people act to reduce drives and their associated tensions. Okay. For example, you want to eat to reduce that hunger. So what we find is a lot of drives, especially biological drives, for thirst. If you get that thirst, you feel a need to quench it. If you get hungry, you feel a need to eat. You have hunger pains. Okay. Most of those things are going to be uncomfortable. The drive reduction theory says that you're going to want to satisfy whatever that need is to get rid of the discomfort. Okay. Drive reduction theory, you want to reduce that drive, and in doing that, you need to get whatever it is. You need to get food or you need to get water to get rid of that drive. Okay. We find some drives are genetic, okay, like hunger, like we talked about, thirst, like I was just mentioning. Some, as we've gone along and evolved over time, have been learned. Are societal, such as a drive for money. A lot of people are driven for money today. That is not something that historically, if you went far enough back, would be a biological drive. It wouldn't make any sense because money didn't exist. Therefore, you wouldn't have been driven to have money. money is something that's come out of a modern economy as a way to barter and trade and move goods around, it wouldn't make any sense to have a biological drive for money. But we've learned it now, okay? Stronger in some of us than in others, but it's definitely there. Drive to get good grades, okay? Again, that has to be learned. You're not going to be born with a drive to get good grades. You might be born with high achievement motivation you want to achieve, but specifically to get good grades, typically you have to be taught that that means that you get to go to a good college, stuff like that. It's not going to be just innately there. Okay?
So I got a question. Yeah. Drives are caused by something that you need or something that you want.
Yeah, if you have a need, for example, you need water or you need food, okay, your body is going to motivate you. It's going to give you this irritated feeling. It's going to give you that feeling of hunger, that feeling of thirst that is uncomfortable to drive you, to push you to satisfy that need. That's what we're going to call a drive. Of course, we find that this doesn't necessarily explain all motivation. Because sometimes we go against our drives. We eat when we're not hungry. I think all of us have done that at one point, eat when we're not hungry. Okay, so that doesn't make a lot of evolutionary biology sense, but we do that. And we might even enjoy a roller coaster, even though in most all of us, we fear heights to a certain degree. It's different in everybody, but most all of us fear heights. And yet we can defy that fear and really enjoy going on a roller coaster. Okay, so it doesn't. We're motivated to get on the roller coaster, and yet it's something that we fear. Okay, so there might be some areas that this doesn't totally account for as well. Okay, the drive reduction theory. Next one is the humanistic theory. And as you go through, try to evaluate them a little bit. See what makes the most sense to you. The humanistic theory says people act out of a desire for growth and fulfillment beyond basic needs. This would be the other end of the spectrum from more biological emphases. Okay, this is very much the idea that we have free will. Okay, we get to make our choices and then we're acting, okay, to try to grow, to try to feel better, to try to fulfill our, go beyond our basic needs, okay? Beyond food, water, shelter, and clothing, things like that. That we are acting to go beyond that to find meaning in life, things of that nature, okay? An example of that fits into the humanistic theory, pursuing art or music, okay? Because it makes you happy. It might be very difficult to make a lot of money doing that. If you've heard the phrase starving artist, it's quite common, and yet a lot of people do it. Okay. They therefore are not necessarily motivated by money, they're not necessarily motivated just by their basic needs, because there are other ways to fulfill those basic needs probably better. So we don't always go with just fulfilling our basic needs. Sometimes there's something else. Okay, so this led to the creation of a humanistic theory. One of the biggest proponents of this would be Abraham Maslow. He comes up with the hierarchy of needs. Okay, he claims that people strive to fulfill their capacity for self-actualization. Self-actualization, according to his hierarchy of needs, is the highest need. That you start out, well, a pyramid I think is going to come up on the next slide, so I won't get into it too much. But self-actualization is, according to Maslow, what we should most desire to reach. Okay. Self-actualization is the need to become what one believes he or she is capable of being. What he or she believes they're capable of being. Okay. So he goes through all of human needs, all the different human needs he could come up with, and he ranks them in a hierarchy. Okay. And he believes that you start at the bottom of this hierarchy and you meet your most basic needs, and then you're able to move up to another level. You meet those needs, you're able to move up to another level. And he said that it was human instinct to want to keep on moving up this pyramid. And this pyramid is this guy. So according to Maslow, we start at the very bottom. We start at the very bottom with our most basic needs. Air, water, food, shelter, sleep, and yes, sex. Okay. Once you satisfy those most basic needs, once you have those taken care of, you move to the next level, which according to Maslow is safety and security. Okay. If you are starving, if you are completely starving, if you are dying of thirst, you might disregard safety and security. You might go down the dangerous alley if you see that there is a source of water there. Okay, because you're desperate. But if you're not desperate anymore, you have some food in your stomach. You have, obviously, air. And you have food. If you have those needs satisfied, he says the next logical step is to look for safety and security. Okay. Shelter, things of that nature. Well, he puts shelter on the bottom. Okay. But I guess safety and security on a larger level. And then you keep on ticking up the scale as you go. Once each level is satisfied, he said the next one is love and belonging. So again, he says basically you're not going to look for love until you have the basic needs met. Okay. That you have to be, I guess, somewhat comfortable before you look for love. And then once you have love and some degree of belonging, and that's not just romantic love. But in fact, in chapter 21, we will look at Sternberg's triangular theory of love and how it breaks down and everything. But that, you know, that's also familial love and even love between friends and stuff like that. So he says once we satisfy that, we move on to self-esteem. Self-esteem being very important. And again, it seems like we try to protect our self-esteem at all costs, even if it amounts to denying to ourselves, maybe when we've done something wrong, trying to project it onto somebody else. We try to protect our self-esteem, and there seems to be a reason we function better. We have a better outlook on life. We're happier, and our body works better if we have higher self-esteem. We're healthier with better self-esteem. So he says. That's the next logical one. And he says, again, the very peak is self-actualization. And he puts in that category creativity, vitality, self-sufficiency, authenticity, playfulness, and meaningfulness. And I always remember the meaning, perhaps more than anything else. The idea that you go beyond, for example, just getting an office job that pays the bills, and you find a career or you find an experience that is makes you feel like you're doing something with your life, okay? So that's his idea of the top of the pyramid. That's what we should all strive for, according to Maslow. And according to Maslow, we all do strive for that, okay? One more theory today, the socio-cultural theory, more of a modern manifestation. This is the idea that individual needs and motives are influenced by culture and society. So as society gets more complex, as we're more affected by being members of society, this theory comes about. For example, the idea that culture affects how we choose to dress, what we choose to eat, and how we choose to eat it. Okay, so again, going far beyond just a biological reaction or an instinct, like the instinct theory, and saying that we are very much affected by our surroundings, and we are very much motivated by our surroundings. Okay. So a slightly more modern theory. And I think that was our last slide for today. Yes?